Australian-made sunscreen to protect those that love their tennis at sunblesssunscreens.com.au and GLG Green Life Group, your open space specialists at glgcorp.com. The First Serve, your home of tennis.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome along to the First Serve. It is your home of tennis on a Monday night, day one of the championships. There's only one place I'd love to be, and that's on the other side of the world, but not to be. That is the world that we live in right now, but a special hour and a half edition of the First Serve coming your way tonight here on SCN. The lines are always open, 1300 736 736, or you can get us on the text tonight, 0433 98 11 16. Always plenty of good prizes to give away. Got the First Serve Tennis Sunscreen, got a copy of the Australian Tennis Magazine to give away, and a whole lot more. 1300 736 736. I was just picturing before, you know, you walk down from the Dog and Fox, of anyone that's been across to Wimbledon there at Wimbledon Village, you go along Church Road, the masses of fans, little left turn into Somerset Road that takes you up to the entry gates to the most iconic tennis tournament in the world. But as I said, such is the times, that's not achievable for your host here tonight. So I'll settle in with all of you for some pretty late nights here in Australia, consuming the next 2 weeks of the 134th edition of the championships. It was 2 years ago that I sat on centre court and witnessed an epic final between Roger Federer and Novak Djokovic. Well, just down the road, an epic game of cricket was being played, a World Cup final for the ages between England and New Zealand, a Sunday of incredible sporting theatre in the same city. I don't think we've seen anything like it. What Augusta is to golf, Wimbledon is simply to tennis. And while I and those of you that live in Melbourne who love tennis and are so fortunate to have one of the four majors in our backyard down the road, it is Wimbledon for me that certainly gets the hair standing on the back of the neck. It's an incredible place to be inside. The tennis action played on a surface that we only see for a small amount of weeks each year that we absolutely cherish. Last week, we saw a hard-fought week of qualifying at Roehampton, 5 kilometres down the road from the All England Lawn Tennis Club, just to earn a spot in the main draw for the next fortnight. On the men's side of the 16 qualifiers, 12 will make their Wimbledon debut, including our very own Mark Polmans and Chris O'Connell. 2 will play their first ever Grand Slam main draw match. On the women's side, 7 of the 16 qualifiers will play in the Wimbledon main draw for the first time, including our very own Ellen Perez. All up, 13 Australians will compete, Ash Barty leading our women's contingent of 4. It was back in 1980 that an Australian woman last won the women's singles trophy, the great Yvonne Goolagong-Cawley. Also, this year, the 50th anniversary of her 1971 victory. 9 Australian men will take to the grass courts, led by the in-form Alex de Minaur, up to a career-high 15 in the world with his title win in Eastbourne over the weekend. Novak Djokovic, the men's favourite on the men's side, as he eyes winning all 4 majors in 2021. The women, well, that is where the conversation is far more complex. Of the last 17 majors since 2017, we have had 13 different winners. As we speak, well, we hope, although there's a bit of rain around London, we're about to go to our man Josh Gablich on the ground, because John Millman is going to kick off the Aussies tonight. Add on court number 12. I think the first time I took in court 12 was a young Bernard Tomic in the juniors many, many years ago. But Josh Gablich is our man on the ground in London, like he was at Roland Garros. He's going to be writing plenty for thefirstserve.com.au, all over our social media and with us tonight. Josh, tell me right now, my friend, is it raining, or are we going to have some play nice and early?
When I woke up this morning, Brett, it was drizzling and it didn't look like clearing. I've got out here in the last hour and a half and the rain has cleared. The nets aren't up just yet, but I'm told they'll be up in the next 15 to 20 minutes. So it looks like we'll have just a tiny delay, but we should get plenty of tennis this morning or this evening back in Australia. So good news, given when I woke up this morning, it looked quite gloomy.
Good to hear. That is good to hear. Although I've looked at the forecast throughout the week, there are a few showers scheduled. And I've got to say, for all of us that are going to have a big fortnight, I personally love that rest day in the middle. This is the last year of the rest day, so let's hope it comes into play, because I wouldn't mind one come the weekend. But who knows what's going to happen with the fickle British weather. Just give us a feel of the vibe. The fans obviously making their way through the gates. Just give us a little feel of what Wimbledon looks like on day one, Josh.
They've started to trickle in. I mean, it's not super busy just yet. We've only got a 50% capacity today, and that'll build up across the sort of this weekend and leading into the second week of the tournament, where they're hoping to have full 100% capacity for the finals across next weekend. Obviously, the Euros are being played at the moment in London, and they're going to have 40,000 at Wembley tomorrow night for that massive game between England and Germany. So they're starting to build up the crowds here. It's a much better position than they thought, even as recently as 2 or 3 weeks ago, when they're hoping for 25%. They've got 50% the first week and potentially more. So it's not a bad feeling at the moment. Obviously, the rain has really contained a bit of the atmosphere so far, but it's such a special place. It's my first time here. You explained it perfectly. It's a sort of into Wimbledon. You go through the village. It's a bit of a pilgrimage. You sort of wind all the way through these beautiful streets out here. And it's a little bit like the Flemington Racecourse, just in and around there in terms of there's a lot of houses and people selling cars, parks out the front of their houses. It's quite funny, but it's a special part of the world, that's for sure. And just everyone's got their fingers crossed that the rain will clear, not just today, but across this first week, because unfortunately, the weather's been perfect up until the past 2 weeks. So when Roland Garros was on, it was absolutely perfect in London and hovering towards 30 degrees. So the weather can get on our side this week, it'll make things much better. But it looks like it's clearing at this stage.
Good stuff. Thank you, Josh. We're going to get back to you in the next hour. I'm just getting some pictures coming in now, and the Nets are not up on court 12 at the moment for John Millman, so there will be a little bit of a delay to the start of play. Thanks to Josh Gablich. We're going to get back to him throughout the hour, our man on the ground in the studio. The panel is with me. Great to have leading tennis writer Courtney Walsh from The Australian. He's also covering footy like me. We just swing back and forth. Walshy, it's great to see you, and you would love to be at SW19 right now, but that's the world we live in.
Yeah, I think you described it exceptionally well before, Brett. Very happy for Josh. I spoke to him about 18 months ago before he made the move overseas, and he was looking to try and get into some tennis coverage. What an opportunity for him to be there this fortnight.
Yep. It's what's the first thing that comes to your mind, Walshy, when you just think of Wimbledon and just an incredible place, isn't it? Steeped in tradition and history.
Look, my early memories of watching Pat Cash in 1987 hitting the forehand volley, I think, against Lendl in that final. Going through to being there, you know, a few times now, and just being in London and getting the train across town, walking down from Southfield, so I come from the other side of the tournament, down past, I suppose, the golf club where everyone's queuing up, thinking how lucky am I that I'm able to walk in and see it a few days in a row, or 14 days in a row. It's a very fortunate thing to have the opportunity to cover it, and it's an amazing event.
Yeah, it's top billing for me, and I'm sure for plenty. I'd love you to contribute tonight if you've been to Wimbledon, if you've got a Wimbledon memory. 1-300-736-736. Great to have Peter Johnson in the studio tonight. He needs no introduction to everyone who follows tennis. He's been involved as a leading administrator for a number of years, certainly with the WTA, Tennis Australia, and, of course, now a tournament director with a couple of key events on the ATP Tour and winning lots of hats, looking after Koo Yong, which we hope will be back next year. Jono, it's great to have you back.
Yeah, thanks, BP. And, Walshy, good to see you both. And, like you said, I think we'd prefer to be having a couple of quiet ones at the Dog and Fox. And and it's funny,
at the Dog and Fox?
But I've seen a bunch of people over the last few days who normally would make the journey over, and everyone's so down in the mouth about it all, and because people can't go. But it is an amazing experience, and certainly one for everyone's list of things to do. And hopefully next year is the time whenever we all can return.
Have you got one a memory or just a moment that stands out? I mean, do you know how many Wimbledons off the top of your head you've been to?
Probably been to 35 or so. 35. I think. I struggled as a player. I battled to get out of Roehampton, and it sort of still bemuses me to see that Qualies has played there, and it's such a, like you said, BP, 5Ks away, but it's actually there's a lot that goes on between that 5Ks. And
you don't really feel like you're part of Wimbledon unless you
get
into the main draw. It's
very much the haves and have-nots. Yep. And, I got there a couple of times, but I always feel like, I've gone a lot of times lately as the administrator and feel a little more. I stay at better hotels as an administrator. I used to stay at Mrs. Hoare's guest house, which you can guess what that was called amongst the group. But, then I got to stay in hotels when I was doing some administration. But, it's great. It's just a whole sort of experience and a real camaraderie with everyone.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's just great to have it back, number one. I mean, we rewind Walshy 12 months ago, and we couldn't believe that it had been cancelled. Just the first time since World War II, and obviously I've just been listening to Sally Bolton, the CEO, doing a media conference in the last half hour, and she was asked when she first knew, and it was January of last year that Richard Lewis and the team were starting to prepare for what was going to be, not just a little issue in Asia, but become a world pandemic. They had the insurance which covered them, but it's a part of last year that we really missed because it's such a short, condensed grass court season as it is.
Far too short for my liking, I've got to say, Brett, but even to have 4 weeks this time around, well, that's far better than what we had last year. Just knowing a couple of people that are working there who've worked through last year, working there this year, you know, last year was particularly hard because that fortnight where it's supposed to be going on, the grounds are empty. So to even have people just sort of filtering back through, you know, as we got closer and closer, and then in the last week we've seen activity with players practicing, you know, at Orangi Park nearby, and the grass looking great, and seeing the interviews with the, you know, with the groundsman, and I'm very happy for them, happy for the tennis world.
Yep, no doubt. Tom in Seaford wants to talk a bit of tennis with us here on the First Serve. Good evening to you, Tom.
Well, g'day, fellas. G'day, Brett. Thanks for the show, Brett. It's a terrific program that it's devoted to tennis. Oh, look, getting to Wimbledon's eluded me. I'd love to get there one day. I think it's a premier event, probably the premier. I think Australia lost something when we took it off grass. I really do. I think the last year was 87. It's a great tournament, the Australian Open, but the hard courts altered everything. And my recollection memory is, you know, Connors and Borg and McEnroe 80, 81 and Nukes and the whole lot. And when the game was played with the wooden rackets and the volleying, it was just something to behold. But I'm probably getting a bit romantic about the old days. But I still think it will be a sad, sad day if Wimbledon never leaves grass. And I wish we could have kept it here, but it wasn't to be.
Yeah, look, I did have another little intro plan that didn't quite get to air at the start, but we're lucky that we've got one of the Grand Slams still on grass. That's the surface, the traditional playing surface, Jono.
Yeah, I think the other thing too, Tom, is that Wimbledon has managed to preserve that tradition over the years so well. Like even they've made so many improvements to the facility over the years, but they've done it all in keeping with the traditions, and they've moved it into the new like so seamlessly. And so that's the attraction, and the tradition is, you know, obviously the key part of the branding for Wimbledon, but ultimately for Australia, it was, I think there was a lot of reasons why we had to get off the grass, and actually the proof's in the pudding in terms of what we were able to do. That led to Melbourne Park being multi-purpose. It led to 100 of the top 100 playing every year. So, you know, times move on, but we're beautiful that we can enjoy these couple of weeks anyway, watching the grass and the real, you know, I guess, foundations of the game.
No doubt. Good on you, Tom. Thank you for your call. It's a nice little segue, in fact, because you mentioned the old days, the wooden rackets. Let's go back 50 years, 1971. Two Australians starred that day. Apparently, there wasn't quite Twinkle Toes on the dance floor, as you'll hear from a little grab we're about to play at the ball afterwards. But Yvonne Goolagong winning her first Wimbledon 1971, John Newcombe winning in the same year. Both have reflected this week on their triumphs.
It was the third Wimbledon that I'd won. It was a tough match. Stan Smith, he led 2-1. And I could tell by the way he was smiling and that, 2-1, that he thought he had me. I came back pretty strong in the fourth set and managed to then break him halfway through the fifth set. So it might have been the toughest of the three Wimbledons that I won. I did beat Ken very easily in the semi-final. I was playing really good tennis. So Stan did a great job to come back against me in the final after I'd won the first set for him to win the next two. Muscles, he and I had a five setter the year before in 1970, which I won in five sets. He doesn't like to talk about that one, but he certainly got his revenge on me a number of times.
I was playing really well. I was on a roll. When it suddenly finished and I'd won, half couldn't believe it a bit. And of course, I was very excited because first thing that came to my mind really was I achieved my dream. So I achieved that dream. It made that moment even more special for me, I think. Oh, it was my favourite. It was a scallop dress, scalloped around the bottom, had buttons up there, and then it was scalloped around the sleeves. Oh, yes, he's a terrible dancer. You know, typical Aussies, we just give each other sort of a tough time about his dancing or whatever. Yeah, no, he was a real character. I played mixed doubles with him a few times at Wimbledon and so on. So funny. He had me in stitches most of the time.
So Newcomb, Yvonne, reflecting during the week, of course, as you heard there from John Newcomb, beating Stan Smith in the final, of course, Yvonne Goolagong defeating the top seed Margaret Court 6-4, 6-1 in the final. 50 years ago.
Quite amazing. I remember Yvonne, you know, won the French a few weeks before that, her first, you know, breakthrough. But Margaret had been beaten in the third round at Roland Garros that year. So to then come out and, I suppose, get the champion in the final, it must have been an amazing thrill for her.
Yeah, and then you think of Nuke and that side of it, and when he just casually threw in there that it was his third Wimbledon. I mean, it's pretty amazing, yeah. Ashley Nuke, and he's so much part of the Wimbledon furniture. Like, he would always, and he must be missing it like crazy, I would imagine, because he always takes that house.
Yep, I went to it 2 years ago, John.
It's sort of a rite of passage, and it used to host the Wimbledon Aussie barbecue, and I guess when numbers started to sort of fall away a little bit, he still would ramp it up, and it was very much the feature for all the Aussies. It was a gathering sort of halfway through the year, and you know, at Wimbledon, it was just like, as he said, he had the three titles, and I think what a great ambassador he's been for the sport.
Yeah, I think that house corner of Bathgate and is it Wimbledon Park Road where it becomes Church Road. Yeah, lucky I went there 2 years ago, and I'd requested to have a chat to him, and he said, "No, just come to the house." And I actually waited in the lounge room for about half an hour. He was finishing off breakfast, but came out and gave us 45 minutes. He was brilliant.
Yeah, it's incredible that he was able to rent that house every year because he trashed it so many times that I'm amazed that the woman kept fronting up and letting him rent it. But maybe he was slicing a few tickets off here and there for her.
So 50 years ago, gee, we'd love to be able to replicate some Australian success this year. Well, Ash Barty doesn't go in with perhaps the ideal preparation, but she loves grass. She's the world number one. She's a class act. We don't quite know because the Barty camp do keep their cards fairly close to their chest as to how exactly she is physically, but she's going to kick off centre court tomorrow, which would have gone to Simona Halep, that honour, as the defending champion. No Simona Halep this year, but she plays Carlos Suarez Navarro on her farewell tour this year, and what a 12 months has been for her overcoming cancer. What are your expectations of Ash, just on the limited little bit of vision we've seen between exiting Roland Garros and fronting up tomorrow?
Well, I think, firstly, having that quarantine period where you were stuck in the house for a few days and not able to do anything after Paris, that was very helpful. I spoke to, I suppose, the team about a week and a half ago. I had last week off, so I haven't been in touch since then. But they were, you know, optimistic that all would be okay at the time, you know, once we got to Wimbledon. I think with her results, she does come to hand pretty quickly in terms of finding form. And this year, I think, has shown that she, you know, returned and won a title in the first week in Melbourne, tailed off in that quarterfinal, but, you know, won that event straight up, gets to the US about 4 weeks later, wins Miami, you know, basically defends that 2019 title, you know, first up. So that, I think, is you know, a positive. She's shown she's very capable. I think Ash at her best is absolutely the woman to beat. I think she's so consistent that she will certainly put herself through to that second round if she's fully fit.
Mm.
And I don't mind the draw necessarily. I think that's, you know, as long, I mean, great story with Carla Suarez Navarro, and hopefully her health holds for many, many, many decades to come. And she's been a tremendous servant. But I think Ash, given where Carla is at her this stage of her career, I think it's probably not a bad starting point. And then, you know, you roll on Konta having the COVID issue, obviously. So she's out of that third round, who is, I think, a potential third round opponent. If she's fit, I think she's certainly, and I think it may have doused some expectations as well, because we don't know. So there's not the, you know, if she wins Roland Garros and goes into the Wimbledon, well, the expectations 2 years ago surrounding her were huge.
Yep.
And almost it seemed like she was fatigued by the time she got to that second week. It had been a massive roll through. So I think it's a little different this time around.
Isn't it funny, at the time when she won the French, and then we thought it was just going to keep rolling. And then, you know, she runs into Alison Risk in the fourth round. I think it was then on court two out the back there at Wimbledon, and it came undone. And it told us that, gee, these are hard to win Grand Slams. No, apart from the freakishness of Serena in the last 20 years, and, you know, Sharapova's had to work so hard to win hers, and Kerber's jumped up and won three, and now Naomi winning her four in the space of 3 years. But there's been a lot of one-off winners, Jono. They're hard-to-win slams, and a lot of them mightn't ever get their chance again, including Barbora Krejcikova. It's a great moment at the French, and whether she's ever going to get to that pointy end of a slam again, I mean, you just got to take them when they come.
You do, and I think with Ash, it's going to get down just to probably how the body is, because this is one that really is there for the taking for her, I think, you know, because you just got not quite that same amount of depth throughout the field. And Ash, I think, has just got the supreme grass court game. So it really sets up well for her. But obviously, as you say, but you know, it all has to go right. And, you know, she's obviously still managing the body. But, it's going to be interesting, though, too, also to see Serena again for the same reasons I'm saying on Ash. It's pretty open for Serena as well. And this is the one for her, make no mistake. Well, so we'll see.
We've been saying it for a while, haven't
we? I know.
Come on. I want to see her at least equal Margaret's record. I think she certainly deserves that. We need to slip in a break. We've got plenty to pull apart. Wimbledon, don't know when we're going to get underway. There's a bit of misty rain that I can see on my monitor here. So not even the nets are up on the outside courts at the moment. So a delayed start for the opening day. John Millman was due to kick it off right on 8 o'clock our time against Bautista Agut, but that's going to be delayed for a little while. Love you to give us a call, 1300 736 736, or keep your thoughts coming through on the text 0433 98 11 16, our Wimbledon edition of The First Serve.
This is the Wimbledon Championships edition of The First Serve, your home of tennis. Thanks to First Serve Tennis Sunscreen, a sunscreen designed specifically for tennis, at sunblesssunscreens.com.au. And GLG Green Life Group, your open space specialists at glgcorp.com.
Now I feel a little more prestigious. I feel like I'm at SW19. Rain is still falling. It's just that annoying, light, sort of misty rain. Annoying rain, Walshy.
Having grown up in Ballarat, I've got to say that it's probably the closest thing a London summer to a Ballarat winter. No, that's not quite true. London in summer can be very beautiful and very warm, but it's not uncommon to get drizzling rain.
But they've been getting away with it for the last few years. It's actually, as soon as they put that roof on, they had so little rain, but now it looks like this week's a pretty ugly forecast from what I've seen.
So John Millman just tucked away, just twiddling his thumbs at the moment, doing a few extra stretches, and we'll see how long it takes the players to get out on court. Just one of the texts that's come through, and we'll take a look at the Aussies and how you see them, the 13 combined across the fortnight. Good to see Ellen Perez in the singles draw. Is she a chance in her first match from Zach? Well, she takes on a fellow qualifier, Clara Burel, the French girl, but her qualifying form, well, she last week was superb.
Oh, and it's outstanding to see Ellen doing so well. Obviously, she made her Grand Slam debut going back a few years ago at the US Open, got the wild card in, I think. You know, had a really nice college career. Has become a very, very, very accomplished doubles player. To perform like she did last week, I think it's really encouraging at 25 or so, 25, 26, to see her doing so well.
Yeah, and what I like about her is she's embracing the whole being on tour again. Like, she's tweeting like
follow
crazy.
Follow her on social media. You know, it's good value.
Yeah, but it's all good stuff. And, you know, her and Astra Sharma, what I like about both of them, they both went through college. And now they're playing it was like that was their apprenticeship. And now they get being on the tour, they get being away, they get everything else. And I think they embrace the life and appreciate it. And the results are showing.
And I also think the fact that, you know, she's having some success in doubles is giving her the experience of being through a tournament through a week. And you might start to see that translate into singles as well. Work for Ash Barty. She got through to, you know, multiple doubles finals. Won a US Open, then comes back and wins a single. So it can work that way, I think.
Yeah, we love watching the lefties. There's something about them. They're pretty dynamic. Swing big, and she's a good ball striker, and obviously having a pretty good doubles run. A bit like Saville and Purcell, has got a doubles ranking up to a really good level where she can play the bigger tournament. So on the menu tonight, Millman v. Bautista Agut. So it's 5-0 in favour of the Spaniard. We know that Johnny's had a patchy sort of year. The one quarterfinal in Munich, his sixth Wimbledon main draw appearance. I think back to the days, Walshy, when he was struggling to get through qualifying. And remember that first time that he qualified, he'd done the hard yards and, you know, he developed a little bit later into his 20s. But now he's become, you know, a permanent fixture, made the third round a couple of times. But the Spaniard, he's tough. He's tough to play. Semi-final 2 years ago, a bit like, well, look, we put Nadal in another category, but like Carreño Busta, you know, can play on any surface. It's been as high as 9 in the world. He's put together a pretty good resume.
Oh, an outstanding resume. Like, I think they've had two real battles at Grand Slam level. One in Melbourne probably 3 years ago, I think, where it went to 5 and John was only a couple of points away from winning that one. Another one in Paris, I think, where it went to 4, but again, it was a really sort of tight affair. Look, classy player. I understand the courts are playing a little dead from what people are sort of reporting. They're not too quick, and we know that they've got slower and slower. So, look, it doesn't necessarily affect Batista a good. Clearly, he's shown himself more than capable of excelling on grass by making a semi-final there.
It's a brutal first round for Melman, really. I mean, Batista a good just years in this higher echelon of players and actually does play well on the grass. He hits it pretty flat both sides, and I think it helps him. Had his best Grand Slam here, actually, as BP said, you know, semis a couple of years ago. Tough one.
Indeed. Chris O'Connell. You know, I'd love to see Chris O'Connell Walshy just have a 6-1, 6-2, 6-3. And he plays some brutal matches, doesn't he? And look, we think back a year ago, and here he's in the wilderness, hardly earning a quid from tennis. He's travelling to the far back blocks of everywhere, gets his ranking down, wins about 80-odd matches. And then last year, everyone found it really tough and trying to consolidate, not lose ground. And now the hardest bit to take the next step of getting inside that top 100. And he's sort of close. So he wins through qualifying. He's got Monfils, who we know he's not travelling that well the last 12 months. And we've seen his disillusionment with tennis, the bubble, the whole COVID situation. And we know he can be flaky. You can get him on a day when, you know, Gail's not firing on all cylinders. Is there a chance for O'Connell, even though the pedigree of Monfils is obviously a lot higher than what he's achieved in the game?
Well, I think he only needs to look back at what happened a week ago with Max Purcell to suggest that he's going to take some confidence in knowing that Purcell managed to beat Gail. I think that's got to be a confidence booster. We know that Monfils at his best is an outstanding player, clearly, you know, among the top 10 players in the world when he's on and firing. And you know, you've seen him do some remarkable things. He's a Grand Slam semi-finalist as well. So if he's firing, very tough ask. But we do know that Chris is particularly tough. And we know he's match hardened and he gets through.
Yeah.
You know, played 5-setter again last week. He played that just getting edged in Paris a few weeks back. He'll certainly give it his all.
And look, he's playing with house money now too, isn't he? Like once you get, like we said earlier, you get through that Roehampton brick wall, because that's what it is, and he's in there, and I think he benefits a lot from, he played, there was Medvedev at US Open last year, and big show court. He's done enough now in bigger matches to sort of not to be too daunted, I give him a huge chance in this one.
Mark Polman's also qualified last week. We're going to hear from Mark before we close in the next hour. He spoke to Josh Gabelich after qualifying on the weekend. Boy, oh boy, he earned his spot, Walshy, and we'd love to see him go to the next level, because he works as hard as anyone to be the best version of himself, and he's trying to add those elements that can take him above the players in front of him. The margins are pretty small. He's at 154. Yang Sun Lu's hardly played any tennis. We know he had, of course, the shoulder surgery. It's derailed him for the best part of 2 or 3 years using the protected ranking. How do you see that one faring? Once again, he'd love to see Mark have a sort of an easier day at the office, but he is built for these long battles, and that could be one that goes the journey if the players get out on court tonight.
Oh, look, I like him in this one. I think provided he holds his nerve, and I haven't seen any indication from Mark that, you know, I know he's lost a couple of tough 5-setters at Grand Slam level before, but he doesn't go away easily. I know he's had some results are a little up and down through the year, but you're going to have that if you're trying to take or add something to your game. It doesn't necessarily come straight away. You will have some tougher losses, and I think it's admirable that he's doing that, not content to be someone that's between 100 and 150. He wants to be in the top 100 and playing these things every single time. But I think he's a good chance.
Yep.
And it's one of the best draws.
Yeah.
I mean, look, really, Yang Sun Lu hasn't played a heck of a lot at all. I think he's really capitalising on this protected ranking, Mark's just going to be so ridiculously hungry. I pen him in on this one.
All right, that's good. I like the confidence. Koo Yong will be watching. The Koo Yong family.
He's got a permanent spot.
Come on, Mark. Let's get it done tonight as another qualifier. Of course, Sam Stosur. I mean, there's probably no, not mean this with any great disrespect at all, Walshy. There's probably no expectation on Sam right now. 37. We don't know when the end is coming. She still wants to play. She still likes the game, wants to tour. Obviously, having a baby last year has changed her life a bit. There's no real form line here. She only played a couple of games coming back in the last 2 weeks. And Shelby Rogers, we know, is pretty decent. Normally, she runs into Ash Barty more often than not, so she gets another Aussie and inside the top 50. So it appears, just the way Sam's sort of travelling at the moment, that that one's going to be a tough match to win.
Oh, no, I think that's probably a fair assessment. We know that Sam probably would have liked to have got across earlier, but yeah. It just was basically impossible for players to go for the entire year unless you're fully committed. And as a mother, you can't necessarily afford to take that long away. Mm. And Shelby Rogers has weapons.
Yep.
You know, we saw her test Ash a couple of times this year already. And another player who really wants to succeed. I think she's worked really hard. So very much a tough one for Sam.
I think so.
Yeah, Sam, zero pressure really, because I think she's happy to be there. Always puzzled me with Sam that she didn't do better on the grass. I thought she'd have a better singles career at Wimbledon. But she'll go out there and play freely, that's for sure. So, you know, she knows how to play on grass.
Yeah, third round three times. 17th appearance for Sam Stosur. We'll see her a little bit later on. We'll take a break, come back. We'll analyse the Demon. 48-hour turnaround. He's going to take on Seb Korda. And some interesting comments from Pat Rafter at Nick Kyrgios. I'll bring that to you next on The First Serve.
This is the Wimbledon Championships edition of The First Serve, your home of tennis. Thanks to First Serve Tennis Sunscreen, a sunscreen designed specifically for tennis at sunblesssunscreens.com.au. And GLG Green Life Group, your open space specialists at glgcorp.com.
Welcome back to The First Serve. We're hearing no play before 9 o'clock our time, Eastern time. So we're still looking at some vision of the All England Lawn Tennis Club, and the umbrellas are up. It's that misty, fine rain. The nets aren't even up on the outside courts. We know that centre court doesn't start till about 10:30 our time tonight. Number one court starts obviously later than the outside courts. So the courts do look absolutely magnificent. Peter Johnston, Courtney Walsh in the studio with me as we sort of just scan our way through the Aussies, a few other talking points. Let's just round out day one with Alex de Minaur. It's the perfect build-up, semi at Queens, wins Eastbourne, 8 of his last 10 on the grass, beaten some good scalps. Like all our Aussie men, you know, they're built with the right stuff. I mean, they work pretty hard and they earn their victories. But it's a great build-up that he's had. You hope he hasn't spent all these petrol tickets, Walshy, and he's got a front up what around about 48 hours after beating Sonigo to play Sebastian Korda, who's one of the young guns who's emerging outside the top 100 start of the year, 50 in the world. We know the genes of the Korda family, golf, they're excelling, tennis, his father, and who knows where the ceiling is for Seb Korda.
World number one sister now after her victory in the LPGA today. World number two father and former Australian Open winner.
Right. We're hoping that doesn't inspire him.
Another sister ranked about 5 going to the Olympics. The mum was ranked 26, I think, and an Olympian. So Seb's up to 50.
Yep.
Finalist at Delray Beach. He won a clay court title last week. I think Andy Roddick described him as, in no uncertain terms, he is the best American prospect in a long, long time.
Mm.
But he is coming up against a player who I think is playing extremely well, was very tough, and I like the fact he's been able to get through some tough moments in matches, including in that final, to go through to leading into a Grand Slam. I don't think a three setter will overly stress him.
No.
Heading into it, it's certainly not an easy draw, but I do think Alex is capable. And I think at Wimbledon in the past, he's shown himself that he likes playing there. I know he got Rafa who gave him a whipping in the third round a couple of years ago, but he's, you know, he's making quarters, he's making round of 16s. So I think he'll be okay.
Yeah, for me, Dumina is the one when you're in the draw rooms, you just don't want to draw him because you know it's just going to be a fight to the death. But I think grass also does really suit him. I think what's underrated in his game is his returns.
Yep.
His returner serve, to me, like he gets so many back. He just finds a way to get them back, which is his whole style. But I feel like he can have a – look, this is tricky, no question, with Korda and but I think he gets through it, and I just when I had a look at the draw, it looked pretty darn open for him, and he's not scared of anyone.
No.
And I give him I think he can have a good Wimbledon.
Yeah, and good to see Walshy, the numbers better on his second serve and points won off that. And that's obviously been something he's been chipping away at. Obviously, he wants to get as high a first serve percentage as he possibly can, but he needs that second serve to have a bit of bite on it so that he's, you know, he's not conceding those points easily to the good returners.
No doubt. And look, we know he's not the tallest man around. I know my colleague in Sydney took a shot at his serve today, but I feel like it's gotten better. And I think it will continue to improve, but we know it's never going to be the great weapon that other players have. So he's got a game that's built around that.
Yeah, but also he gets more off the grass.
Yes, it stays lower.
That's what I think. It suits him so well because he returns well, but he actually gets more off his serve.
Yeah.
He's going to be up to it. Randabet, well, 2 a.m. it is scheduled, but who knows how this day one's going to pan out. So we know that tennis doesn't operate by any sort of normal clock in sport. It's when the weather allows and when the matches finish. And who knows what is going to unfold on day one, but we hope to see him in the early hours of the morning. Nick Kyrgios on a hit-and-run mission, departed last Wednesday. I just want to play a little grab of Pat Rafter, speaking with Adam Gilchrist on Gillian Goss on SENWA on Friday, and his thoughts in regard to Nick Kyrgios.
I don't think we could be any two polar opposites between Nick and I, with the way we play, the talent that we had, and then also the success that we had, how we see life. So I would like to say that we have nothing in common whatsoever. And that's the way it is playing out right now. So for Nick, like, I like the competition. I wanted to push myself and I wanted to see how good I could be. And Nick's different. Nick has all the talent in the world. He had a lot more talent than what I ever had. And he has the ability to, well, not the ability, he actually hates competing. Whether or not he wants to admit that, I don't really care. But it comes through pretty loud and clear that he likes playing exhibition-style tennis. He's a showboat, and he is brilliant at it. But what a player and what a talent. You know, he can do shots that I've never seen before. And he, to me, if he had the mindset of someone like Rafael Nadal, he's got 10 Grand Slams in his back pocket. But for me, as I said, and I would have made that comment, am I a 2 Grand Slam wonder or a 4 Grand Slam sort of player, I would have said that after I'd won 2 Grand Slams, because at no stage did I ever believe I was going to win one. I was trying to win one and I wanted to win one, but I didn't know if I ever was going to win one.
And so on Kyrgios, a very interesting approach to Wimbledon, exactly the way you describe, almost renegade flying in to London for a pretty quick turnaround given it's next week. Can he win a tournament? Even Izovic was a wild card when he took you down.
Yeah, completely different. Goran was playing every week and he was, you know, he had runs on the board. He'd made 3 Grand Slam finals before, and he was playing week in, week out. This is a cop-out for me from Nick. He's going in the day before. It's no pressure. So he's going to go out there to play and have no expectations. And if he loses the first round, he goes, yeah, so be it. I flew in yesterday and I'm playing tomorrow. You know, that's a cop-out. The guy's too good for that. He's a great player. He should be over there preparing. Although, and so why go? I don't understand that. Go and compete and play, or go there and show up and stuff around. But he'll go there and probably cause some damage. The guy is that good. It's freaky. But it's disappointing to me that he flies in a couple of days before. That's not competing.
So that is Pat Rafter. He's always honest. Pat, we know when he's asked a question, he'll give you a pretty honest answer. Probably no love lost. We know sort of where it goes back to when Pat was Davis Cup captain and he struggles with Bernie and Nick. Walshy, just listening to that and then just the thoughts on Nick. And obviously, I think he wanted certainly to play a lead-in, and he was either going to play Stuttgart or Mallorca, but had the neck issue, has gone over late. We think the Olympic team is going to be announced tomorrow is what I'm hearing, and that he'll be in the green and gold is the indications I'm getting. But what's your take on Pat Rafter's thoughts?
Oh, no. Well, look, I mean, Pat did try to get the best out of him at Davis Cup level, and I think that was clearly a source of frustration that consistent best wasn't there. And this was at a time when Nick was really on the rise and they did have issues. I have no issues with Pat saying what he said in terms of his own experiences, because you know that Pat worked very hard and he did point to the incredible talent that Nick has. And we know that the ethic is an issue. We know that Nick can play some spectacular tennis and has shown that repeatedly. It's just backing it up in majors. It's always been the problem, and backing it up over 5 sets and having the body hold up physically. And part of the body holding up physically is to do with not necessarily working as hard as what others do off the court. So that's what Pat has said there. I don't think is anything different. And I don't begrudge Pat saying that. I just hope that we would love to see Nick win one. I'm sure we would love to see Nick winning two, three, four, five, or six. I don't think anyone's had any doubts there. So he does have to be back for another reason. He starts losing points from next month. You know, he's got Washington to defend. He's got so he's been able to hold on in the top 60 or so for the entire break, but he needs to be back playing matches, and I suspect this is a starting point for him.
Walshy, I think that you hit a key point on that last one with the points. This is a big issue because, I mean, Nick at 40 or 50 still gets into draws, but Nick at 90 or 100, it's you are playing XOs because you're not getting in, and you don't really like to see him playing qualies on the back course because that's not his favourite stage either. And but look, what he always likes to do, I think, is set the table his way. We've seen it in the past with the Australian Open where, you know, the last couple of years he's sort of, it's been about the bushfire relief and things where he's sort of, he's tried to shape the public mood. And I think he's done this again here in terms of, as I say, he's on vacation, he's flying in, he'll certainly cause some worries, some headaches. He plays Hubert, and who won Halle, right? So he's actually a bit unlucky with that draw because he got a battle-hardened guy. he might get his first Grand Slam with the mixed.
Yep. Indeed, playing with Venus, that's extraordinary. We'll come back and have a chat about that. But, he shot the lights out a couple of weeks ago in Halle. He was fantastic against Rublev in that final. A break. Back with more on the First Serve.
This is the Wimbledon Championships edition of the First Serve, your home of tennis. Thanks to First Serve Tennis Sunscreen, a sunscreen designed specifically for tennis at sunblesssunscreens.com.au, and GLG Green Life Group, your open space specialists at glgcorp.com.
The First Serve Monday night Wimbledon edition. We haven't got any action though. Covers are on, dark skies, crowds are in, that's good. They've been dying to get back to the tennis. It's been great to have Courtney Walsh, Peter Johnson in the studio for this hour. We are going to extend through to 9:30. We'll hear from Mark Polmans. We'll hear from Ash Barty as well. And also Paul Vassallo from Tennis Australia, because the juniors have been up at KDV Sport, although that's been derailed, the team's championships over the last 24 hours. Gentlemen, I need you to look into the crystal ball and give me a tip. Go out in a limb on the men's. Come on, Walshy.
Yeah, guy called Novak, I think, is probably the man to beat. In the women's, Barty with the asterisk, and Petra Kvitova from the other side of the draw. I think that might be.
It would be nice to see Petra win another major, I reckon. Mm. Whatever it is.
For me, Novak is just, I just can't go past him. No. Women, I'll go. I think I've still got a question mark on Ash, and I'll go for Angie Kerber.
Angie Kerber.
I just feel like she's been struggling, but she knows how to win this thing, and she won last week.
I was watching a few highlights of her forehand in her prime a couple of years ago. Well, she gets down that crouch position and just crunches it.
And when she's won majors in the past, she's often performed very well either the week before or 2 weeks before.
Mm. Yeah. So I think she's on track to play Serena.
Yep.
Third round.
Serena doesn't like playing her there.
No. Not at all. Not at all. We've got about a minute here. Is there a dark horse? Is there someone that might come from the clouds a little?
How deep do you think Federer's going to go?
Well, okay, hand on heart. I mean, we want the fairy tale, don't we? I mean, he's got the draw where he could certainly get to quarters. Mm. And, I mean, he played three good matches at the French. So there's still some tennis left in Roger, and the grass he loves.
I think if he can work into the tournament, the second week could be a different ball game.
For me, I'm a bit like this too. In the bottom half, like, say, Medvedev's second seed.
Yep.
Standing 45 feet behind the baseline, Roger knows how to play those guys on grass. I think he's going to have a good Wimbledon.
We hope so. We hope so. We want another great moment from one of the greatest of all time. Thank you, Pete. Thank you, Walshy. We'll catch you across the fortnight. We've got plenty more to come after the break. We'll hear from Mark Polman, Ash Barty, and we'll continue to look ahead to day one of the championships.
The championships, commonly known simply as Wimbledon. The oldest tennis tournament in the world and widely regarded as the most prestigious. It's been held at the All England Club in Wimbledon, London since 1877 and is played on outdoor grass courts since 2009 with a retractable roof over centre court and since 2019 over number one court. Wimbledon is the only major still played on grass, the traditional tennis playing surface, and quite simply, it's great to have it back. Sorely missed this time a year ago.
Bring you some breaking news, and it is not unexpected, and it is that Wimbledon is now cancelled. Wimbledon board have issued a statement basically saying that they've decided that the championships 2020 will be cancelled. So not postponed, they're not even bothering to push it back. It's going to be cancelled due to public health concerns, clearly the coronavirus epidemic. And they say the next championships, the 134th championships, will instead be staged next year, 2021. So not a postponement, a cancellation.
The first cancellation of the tournament since World War II. What will the next fortnight bring? A win for men's world number one Novak Djokovic would tie him on 20 majors with his two champion rivals Roger Federer and Rafael Nadal. Can the grass of SW19 inspire Roger to one more moment of greatness? Serena goes again in her quest to equal Margaret Court's all-time singles record. Can our very own Ash Barty find her best after not the ideal build-up? Will there be some names come out of the clouds that we can't predict right now? Strawberries and cream, a glass of Pimm's, tradition aplenty. So many memorable moments on court and home of the longest match in tennis history back in 2010 between John Isner and Nicholas Mahu.
It is over. A sporting embrace between these two fantastic combatants. Because at last, at long, long last, we have a winner.
We played the greatest match ever and the greatest place to play tennis.
The guy is an absolute warrior. To be able to, you know, share this day with him was an absolute honor.
That match is still one of the most talked about matches in tennis history. How did they do it? 70-68. It was a superhuman effort of physicality and mentally so draining.
70-68 in a final set over 3 days. Incredible. Tonight, the action begins from the most famous postcode in tennis, SW19. The First Serve, your home of tennis, would love to be live on the ground. But thanks to First Serve Tennis Sunscreen, a sunscreen designed specifically for tennis at sunblesssunscreens.com.au and GLG Green Life Group, your open space specialists at glgcorp.com. Let's start from our SEN Melbourne studios. It's the Championships with Brett Phillips.
And we're just waiting for play to begin, but while it does take a little while to get in on court on day one, it's great that on the monitor to my left, I'm watching back to 2019, the men's singles final. It was an epic between Federer and Djokovic. And just to think back, Roger had two match points at the age of 37, which would have been one of the great victories. And I remember sitting in the box that day on centre court. It was as tense as you'd ever be at a sporting contest. And then down the road, you had England and New Zealand playing one of the greatest cricket matches we've ever seen in a World Cup final. It went down to the last ball. And, yeah, I don't know if I want to watch the last bit where Roger misses a couple that he should have. But our extended version of the First Serve tonight for the next 25 minutes or so. We're going to hear from Mark Polmans in just a moment. He's hopefully going to take to the court a little bit later on, but I can tell you the covers are on. John Millman was supposed to start his match about an hour ago. One of five Australians, along with Chris O'Connell, Sam Stosur, Alex de Minaur, in the early hours of tomorrow morning, will take on Sebastian Korda. Novak Djokovic, well, the roof will be closed if it needs to be. That's the good part about centre court and the number one court now at Wimbledon. After all the renovations, that we can still get some play if the heavens do open, and Novak Djokovic is the defending champion, will kickstart proceedings against a young Brit in Jack Draper. It was only about 3 weeks ago that he took down one of the hottest young prospects in the game in Jannik Sinner. Going to be a tough assignment, though, to bring down the Joker. He is the short price favourite, absolutely, to win his 20th major and tie Rafael Nadal and also Roger Federer. Mark Polmans, it's hard not to be a fan of Mark. We've interviewed him a number of times. He's qualified for his maiden draw at SW19. You've got to work hard a few Ks down the road at Roehampton. Josh Gablich, part of our team. We'll get back to Josh very soon, but did catch up with Mark after winning through to the Wimbledon first round.
Mark, thanks for your time. Take us inside this week. You must be absolutely pumped to be in the main draw at the All England Club next week.
Yeah, thank you, Josh. I'm quite pumped, you know, to get through yesterday's, you know, epic battle. Every time I play five sets, I seem to go all the way, all the, you know, I play all five sets. So So I was just happy I was able to come through it. And yeah, to have a shot now in the main draw at Wimbledon, it's an awesome opportunity. Yeah.
You touched on that third round of qualifying because you breezed through the first round and the second round, but yesterday they went for five sets. It went for nearly 4 hours, I think. Take us inside that match because it went to 11-9 in the deciding set. It was an epic encounter in qualifying. It's just amazing that that's the way you qualified for Wimbledon for the first time.
Yeah, I mean, it was a back and forth sort of match. You know, I had a great start and took the first set and he battled back. And I won the third set in the tiebreak. So, you know, it could have gone either way at that stage. But, you know, he did well to fight and take it to a five-setter. But I just think it was I had a slight advantage, you know, serving first in the fifth because, you know, I was always ahead of the scoreboard and eventually, you know, I knew the pressure would become, you know, quite a lot, especially, you know, getting to 9-all, 10-all. So, yeah, I'm just happy I was able to break eventually, just in time before the, you know, the match tiebreak happened at 12-all. So, yeah, definitely a cool way to qualify for my first Wimbledon, definitely.
You spent a lot of time at the Kooyong Lawn Tennis Club, and a lot of Australians grow up watching Wimbledon on TV late at night and dreaming about playing at Wimbledon. Were you one of those kids that grew up dreaming about playing on Wimbledon?
Oh, I think all young kids, you know, we've grown up watching, you know, Federer and Rafa have all these epic battles at Wimbledon. So it's always been, you know, it's the only slam I haven't played in the main draw of. So it was definitely something I really wanted to achieve. And, you know, to be in the singles main draw amongst all the other, you know, best players in the world. And I think there's nine Aussies in the main draw this year. So it's a good achievement for the Aussie tennis, definitely.
Let's talk about your preparation now. You fell in the third round of qualifying at Roland Garros and headed to Nottingham and played a couple of tournaments there. What's your preparation been like on grass? Because as we know, it's a condensed season given the delay of Roland Garros. It's really come around really quickly.
Yeah, it was a quick turnaround after Paris. You know, I went to hard court for a few days in Valencia and then went straight to Nottingham when they allowed the players to arrive. And, you know, I had two, you know, I lost first round of both challenges and close matches. But I just feel that was always going to be great prep for Wimbledon. You know, having 2 good weeks on grass and practicing a lot on it. So I feel like that paid off at the qualifying at Wimbledon. But, you know, it's such a short season, so you got to enjoy it. It only comes around for three and a bit weeks. So, unfortunately, this is the last event on grass for me this year, but, you know, it's going to be a good one at least.
Let's talk about next week now. Your first-round opponent is a man that's been around for a very long time. He's a 37-year-old from Chinese Taipei. He's won more titles on the Challenger Tour than anyone. He reached the quarterfinals at Wimbledon back in 2010. You've never played against Yen Sun Liu. How do you prepare for someone that you've never played against and how are you feeling leading into your first round match?
Yeah, you know, Liu, he's been around a very long time and he's been in the top 100 for a very long time too. So he's one of these guys who, you know, he knows his game. He knows how to win. So it's going to be a good challenge. But, you know, he hasn't been playing a lot this year. He's just been picking and choosing a few of the big events. So, you know, I'm happy that I've got a lot of matches under my belt and I'll definitely have more under my belt than him. So I'll be, you know, looking to you know, do my best and try to extend the match and make it physical and see how things go.
Well, there's no doubt Mark Polmans will make it physical. The man conducting that interview is live on the ground for us at SW19. Unfortunately, no play. Josh, as I welcome you back to our coverage, we've got the monitors on here. The covers are on. What are you hearing? And how? I mean, it's hard to tell through our monitor here, but is it just that fine sort of misty rain, Josh, that annoying rain?
Oh, Brett, it's just drizzle. It's not even interrupting anyone's start to the day. Everyone's still out and about. There's barely any umbrellas out as well. It's just one of those really light, persistent drizzles that isn't quite going away. The official word is that play won't start until at least 12:30, and
okay,
seems that's probably a little bit ambitious now. So we're probably another hour away from getting underway. I just spoke to one of the groundsmen there, and I'm not sure if you can see on the monitors, but all the covers and they use, it's almost like a jumping castle.
It
you
is.
Know, the jumping castle to blow the air in, and they do that to keep the rain from setting on the court. So it's not so much to blow onto the grass and keep that dry, but it's quite fascinating the sort of technology they're using here. But yeah, a bit of an anti-climax this morning, because I think a lot of people were really excited given the way the UK has been tracking in terms of capacity. We've got 50% here today, and there's a lot of people in here now. You and I spoke a couple of hours ago, and it was just sort of trickling in, and I think people are just slowly coming in because of the weather. But as I said, it's not proper rain. It's only drizzle, so hopefully it can clear and we can get these matches underway.
That'd be nice. Just before I let go, we played a little bit of your Mark Polman's interview, and of course the full version is up on our website and our social, so check out thefirstserve.com.au and right across Facebook, Twitter and Instagram. Josh is on the ground for us at Wimbledon across the next fortnight, delivering plenty of content by the hour, but he's a good young guy, isn't he? He's got an appetite for hard work, Josh, and it'd be lovely if that could carry over into a first-round victory.
I really enjoyed my conversation with him, especially just to hear the excitement. He's qualified for the first time, and he did it the long way in qualifying, and obviously won 11-9 in a fifth set of the third round of qualifying. It's a pretty remarkable way to qualify for the All England Club. I think, like a lot of people, and I asked him about dreaming about playing at Wimbledon. I think a lot of Australians grow up really dreaming about playing at Wimbledon, and he's no different to a lot of kids that grew up watching Wimbledon late at night. Mm. In those winter nights in Melbourne. So, yeah, you could hear the excitement. I mean, it's a pretty special place. I'm only just experiencing it. I've been here for a couple of hours now, but you and I have been watching this tournament for many, many years, and it is really glorious. So I'm really looking forward to seeing him on court, hopefully later today. But if things get shuffled back, we may not see him until tomorrow. But he's got a great opportunity to get through the first round. He's got a wily old veteran in Henson Liu, who's 37 years old, but he's been around for a very long time, been in the top 100 for a very, very long time. Mm. But Mark has played a lot of tennis this year compared to Lou, who has barely played at all. I think he's only played 5 or 6 matches. So hopefully we'll see him a little bit deeper into this tournament and can really sort of launch his time here at Wimbledon. But yeah, I'm really excited by him. I have been for a while.
Indeed. Love to see him crack double figures. There's a few Aussies in that category. There's O'Connell, there's Bolt. There's a lot with a lot of talent that we want to see get to double figures at some point. Brett on the text, watching Wimbledon is like taking me back to my childhood and the prestige of the old suburban footy grounds. Poor analogy, but it's incredibly nostalgic and just that bit more special. Yeah, I mean, look, even if you don't love tennis, just get there one day when you next head to London. Make sure you time it and get to SW19. Thank you, Josh. We're going to get a break in, but we're going to catch you right throughout the evening on our website and our socials, and you'll bring us right inside the tournament across the next fortnight.
This is the Wimbledon Championships edition of The First Serve, your home of tennis. Thanks to First Serve Tennis Sunscreen, a sunscreen designed specifically for tennis at sunblesssunscreens.com.au. And GLG Green Life Group, your open space specialists at glgcorp.com.
Welcome back to The First Serve. There is no play as we speak. Rain delay. We're supposed to start an hour ago. Covers are on. Gloomy, dark clouds. So nothing to report from Wimbledon at the moment. Just to finish off, a little closer to home, more than 150 of the best junior tennis players from Australia and New Zealand arrived on the Gold Coast late last week to compete in the 2021 Australian Teams Championships, of course, at KDV Sport, which is a brilliant facility opposite Metricon Stadium. Well, we know that COVID prevented that from being fully completed yesterday. The under-11s, 13s, 15s are set to get underway this week. Earlier today, I caught up with Director of Talent at Tennis Australia, Paul Vassallo, to take us inside the Teams Championships.
New South Wales played the first day, and then unfortunately their state went back into a lockdown, so they had to get taken out. So once they left on the Saturday, we thought everything was going well and teams were going, and you get into that teams environment. We hadn't done it for so long. The last team event, I think, was back in 2019. So especially when you do it at KDV, you said it is a great facility. When you're doing a teams event at KDV and you have all the courts right up against each other and you've got coaches on the court and you've got real atmosphere. You've got kids all crowded around and parents, and it was loud. Sometimes it was loud and it was exciting. And we went to the back end of the day and the situation just started to unfold through the media. We start to hear snippets that someone might be closing down and there's going to be restrictions and all sorts of stuff. And then we get to the end of the day and next thing you know, yeah, we are. We've got parents and kids and coaches that need to return home at ASAP to try to get out of a situation where they're going to be stuck in another state and and just total uncertainty. So that's where we got to. You know, we get to 6 o'clock on Sunday, and unfortunately, the event got postponed for now. Who knows, maybe it'll revisit later in the year. But with COVID, everything changes so quick.
Absolutely. So you had the under-11s, under-13s competing, and then it was going to be, I think, the under-15s starting a little bit later this week.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it would have been semi-final day today up at KDV there on the Gold Coast, and finals tomorrow with a day break in between and the 15s. Yeah, the 15s would have kicked off on Thursday and be done by Sunday. So, yeah, the decision was made just with so much uncertainty. And what started with uncertainty turned into certainty, where we knew that people were not going to be allowed back in their state without quarantine. So, unfortunately, as I said, we say postponed for now because you'd be nice to think we can come back and finish off and give them another opportunity to complete this event. But there's a bit of a wait and see there.
So tell us a bit about the teams championships, how that works compared to some of the other big events you're having this year, and how players are sort of selected, if you like.
Yeah, so it is. So every state is selected. They take three players. Some states take four, but the majority of teams that we have three. So the age was 11s, 13s, and again, as you said, 15s will start a bit later on. But in some states, you know, the MA is involved in choosing the team and supporting the team and getting them to where it is. And this time it's at KDV and was when it was held last time also. But so when we go through that process, it's UTR based, and as I said, the top three kids in the team, and it's quite unique. You know, you think about every other tournament during the year, there's, you know, coaches that go along and support their kids, and parents are always there, of course. But with this one, it's a bit like the Billie Jean King Cup and the Davis Cup. And there's, you know, a coach on the side of the court for the duration of the matches, which is great. Like our whole team, the National Development Squad team, we're all up there for the week. And fortunate enough, too, that we can have some private coaches come along to support the teams also. So that's what we're doing. It's an amazing event. You know, it's good for kids. It'd be nice to do it more often, to have coaching on court with kids, because you do see some very good attitudes. You see some kids that can fight back or continue their win just on the fact they've got someone in their corner who's able to give them the advice. You know, we all know what happens in footy and soccer. The advice from the coach can be immediate. In tennis, it's after the win or after the loss. But this is a chance to help kids out, even just mentally and emotionally, not just with the actual, you know, often that is the big turning point in the game for these kids. And that's an event like that, that's what we get to provide. So that's the uniqueness of it. And it's been a while since we got to do it last time. Again, hope we get to revisit it again this year, but otherwise, back again next.
Of the competition that was played, Paul, what were some of the maybe little standout moments or some names you might be able to mention? Obviously, we're following a lot of, you know, young juniors who are progressing. Talia Kakena, she joined us on the first serve a number of weeks ago. One of the best well-spoken 12-year-olds I've ever had. I didn't even have to ask a question. And I know her and her dad, Sam, were up at KDV the last few days. But tell us about some of the action that unfolded.
Yeah, watch Talia. Yeah, no, I heard her on your show a few weeks ago. She's great. If you need a co-host one day, she'll be to jump on for sure. So, yeah, she was great. She, again, watching Talia on the court next to her was the Vic team and Kaharu Coco from Victoria, who she beat in the final there at Canberra. They were both very good players. You know, two of the standouts, not the two, but definitely two of the standouts in that girls age group. A few of the boys too, you know, Jake Dembo from WA, very good. Obviously Cruz was there, a boy from Victoria who took out Cruz on day one. There's some really good talent coming through. And again, I just think with the coaches on court, it's already a good level of play. Like what we saw at Canberra was very good, but with someone in their corner for the duration of the match, it was tighter again. The lapses in concentration are definitely less, and the standard plays get to held the whole way through. A lot of good kids, like, you know, again, the 15s next week, it was going to be up to, you know, having Charlie Camus and kids like that around. We unfortunately don't get to see them run around again, but we do have a lot of talent there at that younger age group. We just need to now hopefully find a way throughout COVID where we keep on providing opportunity events for them and not just go, well, it's too hard now, which we'd never say that, and it's not. We've got events that are coming up. There's Perth grass courts still planned for October, and Showdown should be going ahead in December. So a lot to look forward to with these kids.
We've had some ITF junior events this year. There's more scheduled, but in the times we're in, I mean, you're going to try and deliver as much tennis as you possibly can, but it makes it tricky, doesn't it? Just the uncertainty of the period we're in with this whole COVID situation.
Yeah, look, it is tricky, and it's disappointing when things get postponed or cancelled like happened yesterday. But yeah, with the ITF, it's full intention to go ahead with them and keep on planning. We're not going to sit down and say it's too hard. If we do that, we might as well give up and go home. But yeah, we'll keep on planning and going ahead with events that are all scheduled until we get told by governments that we can't. As simple as that. Next week we're meant to be on, and we're planning on that route now, and there's meetings going around that, and there's always contingency plans. But for right now, yeah, with everything that's in the schedule, hopefully we get to fulfill that schedule. And there's a few other things that will pop up in the meantime as well, as additions for players whether it be tournaments and camps throughout the end of the year as well.
Okay, so that's Paul Vassallo. He's the Director of Talent at Tennis Australia, bringing us up to date with the team's championships at KDV Sport. Unfortunately, not been able to be completed as we speak with all the kids and parents sent home with all the border restrictions and COVID implications from the weekend. Roddy, BP, any news on why Piers has split with Michael Venus, John Piers, that is. Notice he's playing doubles with Tomo. I don't know the official reason, but since the French Open, he's played, what, two events, John Piers, one with Riley Opelka, one with JP Smith. The Olympic team is due to be announced for Australia tomorrow, of which no doubt De Minaur and Kyrgios will be in there. And I think they can name a couple of doubles pairings. So I think this might have something to do with Tokyo in regard to John Piers. You know, certainly playing with a couple of the Australians the last few weeks. But I'll keep an eye on that and we'll dig a little deeper. Follow us at thefirstserve.com.au, all our socials. Catch all the action on Nine and Stan Sport. Hopefully we'll get some action at Wimbledon.